And we're really lucky again here tonight to have Sam Cook joining us. And Sam, of course, is the outdoor editor at the Duluth News Tribune. We've been reading his columns for all these years, enjoying them here on the Roadhouse on numerous occasions. And it's great to have him back. Sam, welcome back to the Roadhouse.
Thank you. Good to be with you and Deb tonight on the Roadhouse. I always enjoy it.
Oh, thank you. It's spring, but yet, because it is March, and it's finally starting to feel like spring, Sam.
Yeah, this is a welcome relief from what we've had. It's been a haul. I mean, a lot of us like winter, or we probably wouldn't live here, but I've had more people tell me, you know, I like winter, but I'm getting sick of this. It just seemed like it was so windy when it was cold. Well, A, it was cold a lot, and B, it seemed like it was windier when it was cold this year than it's been in a long time. I don't know.
It's been a crazy year. You know, we had Mark Seely on last week and learned a lot about the weather, and it went one of the five coldest winters on record.
Right. Yeah, I think, depending on how you measure it, whether it's average temperature or what, I mean, in Duluth, I think it's the second coldest ever.
Wow.
I sit next to John Myers, one of my colleagues who kind of covers the weather stuff, and he's always got the latest stats. So,
now, how did it affect your livelihood or as far as what you do over the winter? There were some days where maybe fishing wouldn't have been that much fun.
Right. I mean, I've been out a few times, but I've talked to people who just haven't gone that much because it's just a pain if anything breaks, or just trying to get set up when it's the wind chills are, you know, 40 below or 30 below or something like that. So I think it's, and, you know, I don't think people have been out riding snow machines as much because it's hard to stay warm when it's that cold and you're creating your own wind chill. So I think it's affected a lot of people in a lot of ways.
Now, I noticed a column not long ago that you brought up spring camping.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe just a way to relieve people's cabin fever?
Well, I'm just saying how I feel, kind of, and I don't know. I assume, I used to think I was the only one that felt these certain ways when I'd write stuff, but then I'd get all these comments from people, so I realized, well, geez, I must not be alone here, and it was funny because I went to go to bed the other night and the sheets were cold and I got in and I thought, you know, I'm lucky I live in a warm house and everything, but I realized that I'd really like to be slide into a sleeping bag at some campsite and, you know, it'd be open water and, you know, all the things that go along with that. So I just kind of wrote about that. And you know, I know for other people it's, you know, starting to think about getting the boat ready or whatever. I mean, it's way early to do that, but at least kind of after a certain point, you at least feel free to think about it a little. For a while, it was like if you thought about it, it would just be too tantalizing to hold on to. You had to just stay in the moment or you'd lose it, you know?
Yeah, I told Deb a little earlier in the program that it's nice to have a low that's actually warmer than my deep freezer.
I know. It's amazing. I talked to John Myers, my colleague, before I left. I said, John, now how many nights below zero have we had this winter? He said, we're very close to 70. And,
wow. You
know, a lot of those were way below zero. And it's really been something. And I got a fat bike this year, one of those mountain bikes with the real fat tires, because I thought, you know, if we keep having warmer winters, it'd be a nice alternative to skiing when the snow's not great for skiing or something. Well, it was great this year, too, because there were a lot of nights it was too cold to cross-country ski with skimpy clothes on, you know. So I'd go out in my mukluks and layer up and take the dog, and we'd go out and ride hard-packed trails with the fat bike. And it kind of was a way to, it really helped me kind of get through the winter in some ways. And there are a lot of folks who are getting those. It's quite amazing.
I don't imagine you would remember all those years ago when you and I skied down the Cadence River.
Yes, I remember that well. I tell the story every now and then.
Okay. Well, that year, you know, I think you took a photograph of me when I went over one of the falls and disappeared in the snow beneath.
Possibly, yes.
This year, I snowshoed down it. We have a lot of snow this year.
Oh, yeah.
But in the middle of the snowshoe trail was the trail of a fat tire bike.
Yeah. Yeah, they do like to ride rivers. We ride up and down Amity Creek here, and a buddy of mine posted some pictures on his blog of riding down the Lester River. I mean, I assume he rode up as well. It's quite a deal. There are a lot of places you can ride them. In the last few days, we've had people riding them out on Lake Superior down here.
Yeah.
Where the lake trout fishermen are out there pulling up lake trout.
Well, that's kind of what another thing I wanted to talk to you about, how the ice has opened up some other opportunities for folks out there.
Yeah, I mean, last weekend I wrote about the Kamloops fishermen, or anglers, I guess they were all males, off the mouth of the French River, and that ice subsequently blew out before the story even appeared. But, I mean, I think that ice is like 4 inches thick. You know, I go out there gingerly walking out there, and I talk to some guy, and I said, how thick's the ice? He said, oh, plenty of ice, 4 inches, you know. And for walking and you're not that far from shore, it's no big deal. There's probably a foot down here now, and, I mean, there is a foot or more down, you know, off the mouth of the Lester River and up the shore a ways. And, you know, I counted 63 houses out there last Saturday. And when I was out on Tuesday to do a story and talk to a bunch of folks, there were 53 houses out there, I think. So,
yeah, one of the effects of the winter we've had this year has been the migration of so many people to the ice caves down outside of Washburn and Bayfield.
Yeah. Yeah, we were part of the pilgrimage, and, you know, we've been... When the kids were younger, we'd take them over there, and Phyllis hadn't been over there for quite a while. I've done a couple of trips in the summer by kayak since then, and I thought, oh, man, it's going to be busy over there. I'm really not too crazy about going because I know the word is out. And we were there the day they had the most, maybe they've had more since then, but there were 8,500 people there on that Saturday.
Wow, 8,500 people?
In one day, yep. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I could not believe it. I didn't know until later how many they had that day, but there were cars. We had to park, like, I don't know, a mile down the highway from the road where you drive down to the lake, and that's another four-tenths of a mile, and then you have to hike at least a mile or a little over a mile to get to where the sea caves begin, and they go for a couple miles. Well, you start adding all that up, and that's a lot of walking, and there are people who thought, well, it's just a mile out to the caves. I can walk that far, and you know, they're hauling people slipping, falling the ice, and bung themselves up, and they've had several ambulance calls. And but I was astounded by the numbers that day.
Had I known 8,500 people in one day, I'd have been over there selling tickets.
Getting pledges.
Entrepreneur, you know.
Because they can probably pick up WTIP straight across the lake there.
I bet they could. I should have been on the ball.
Yeah. No, so. it was an amazing thing. And, you know, they were still cool and beautiful and as good as I remembered them. And once you just kind of accepted that there were all these other people around, we actually waited in line behind three people to take our pictures at a certain little spot that we wanted to get a picture. So that's not usually how we have to do things up in the north here, not overrun.
You know, over the years, you've done some wonderful stories on some iconic people here in the Northland, and I think of Herb Benson, I think of, like, Mark Hansen, and a lot of old-timers, but this weekend...
You mean old-timers like Hansen?
Well, he's an old-timer
right,
now,
sure.
Yeah. He's
just wanted to make sure we were on the same wavelength.
That's right,
yeah,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Not to, yeah, Irv Benson, he wasn't an old-timer, but Mark, he feels that.
No, that's different, yeah.
But coming up now in the March 16th edition of the Duluth News Tribune, you're going to have a full story about another one, and that's Dick Powell.
Yeah, Dick Powell and his wife, Sherry. I went up and spent a couple days with them here, and I thought I might do the story sooner, but I think it'll run next weekend, like you said. And boy, what a wonderful privilege it is to sit across the table from Dickie and just listen to him tell stories. I mean, he grew up on Sag. His parents ran a resort down on Scandia Bay and a little fishing camp. And then for years, you know, he ran the Chippewa Inn, he and Sherry. And the things he's seen up there, just living on the edge of the wilderness up there like that, and basically kind of in the wilderness, you just see things at different seasons that the rest of us just aren't likely to see, and just because you spend that many days up there. But his stories are wonderful, and he's not a tall tale teller. He just remembers a lot of stories, and he said he and Sherry are recording some because he said, you know, I don't think I'm anything special, but I know that when I'm gone, these stories are gone. So anyway, we'll share that story next weekend, and there are just some people I didn't want to miss doing, and he was one of them.
You know, that whole family over the years, and I go back quite a few years, whether it was Frank or Betsy or any of the pals that were up there, they're great storytellers, and there's something about that lifestyle that we don't live. Most people don't live. It just lends itself to being great storytellers.
Yeah, I just think it's because they have so many experiences. And several of the people who I talked to about Dickie said, I said, you know, his stories, you don't ever get the idea that he's telling you a story to impress you or like it's something cool because he was there to see that. It's like he values the stories just because he knows that they're unique and he just wants to share them with people. And everybody I talked to said, that's exactly right. There's no ego involved in it, just not there to impress anybody. And his son Rich said, yeah, I've heard Dad tell a lot of stories, and when I hear a story that I was involved in, that I was along for, he said, I always think, yep, that's exactly how it was. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really neat for someone who shares things like that to do it in an authentic way.
Now, over the years, you've talked to so many people in your capacity as outdoor editor, some of the experiences sometimes they're a little difficult when you're out there all day fishing in the cold and you're not getting any bites and there isn't that much to write about. And then you have somebody like Dickie Powell, and have you kind of got one of your, is any one of those, you know, those great stories, tellers, some of your favorites?
Oh, I just feel
that unfair question?
I really feel lucky to have known and interviewed Benny Ambrose, the old prospector, trapper, whatever, who lived up on Otter Track, and Art and Dina Madsen, and Irv Benson, and Tempest Benson Powell, Tempest Powell Benson. Geez, she was really neat, and I didn't get to see her out on SAG, but I saw her where she was living in Tower. I know those people are just... they were kind of the last bunch of those people, and Dorothy Moulter down on Knife Lake. Those people were kind of the last of that group of folks who were able to live out there, chose to live out there, and lived a way of life in a remote place where you have to pay attention all the time. And like one of the things Dickie said was, I said, is there anything you consider kind of a risk about living out here? You know, typical city guy question. But he said, well, no, just at freeze up and break up, he said, that time of year you kind of go into a different mode of living, and I think you're just careful, you know. And he said, like, you wouldn't pick up a chainsaw and start cutting. Now see, that is just most of us don't have to make decisions like that and think about life that way. But he knows that at that time he wouldn't be able to get help. So
I just listened to you rattle off some names that people kind of my age all knew so well. Have you ever considered weaving some of those stories together in a book form?
Yeah, I have. And I think maybe after I retire I'll do that. I don't know when that'll be, maybe I should do it before, but I've thought that I probably should. I've got a few in books already, but I should probably do that. And I think, I've been in a unique position, lucky to be able to go talk to all those people. And most of us might know a couple or whatever, but it's really a privilege to have been able to talk to all those people. I've missed a couple. I missed Russ Blankenberg. I didn't know about him in time to wake up and do a story on him. I missed Knife Lake Pete, another guy kind of out of Ely who lived up on Knife Lake and baked bread and stuff and was known. But, you know, I've tried to make it a point to get to the others, so... Yeah, Bob Carianelli, and I've written about him, too. He was a wonderful character. He wasn't a back-in-the-woods sort of character, but he was a very interesting guy, too. Funny.
What's your spring looking like, Sam? Have you got a major fishing trip yet as far as ice fishing goes?
No, nothing too major. I was going to go up and fish with this guy. Did you read about the guy up on at Crane Lake who caught that big lake trout?
I did.
52 pounds, they say, on a digital scale, handheld, and it never got weighed officially. But we called that off. He and I said we'll let it rest for a while after it turned out that that fish and his catching it are under investigation by the Ontario Ministry of Natural Resources, because apparently he had caught, well, he did, he told me he caught another trout that day, and his limit was actually one, and he later gave it away, but he actually probably possessed two lake trout that day, and I don't know what's going to happen to that big fish. But so we called that trip off, but no, nothing too big. This weekend I'm writing about the lake trout fishing off on Lake Superior on the ice, and again, that ice could go any day, too. We don't know how long that'll last, and I haven't decided where to go for the fishing opener yet. I started to think about that, and turkey hunting, probably a trip into southern Minnesota someplace along the way. And Brule River opens March 29th, but unfortunately, that's the week Phyllis is off of school, and we often take a vacation, and we're heading to Switzerland this year, not like we are flitting around the globe, but our son's over there working, so we're going to go over there and visit.
Well, that all sounds just great. We always look forward to talking with you, Sam, and it's been so much fun again tonight to talk to you. You know, we're in the middle of our pledge drive.
Yeah. Do you need me? Are you asking for money or what?
Well, you know,
I'll send a check. Don't worry. It's bad to do the interview and have to pay for it.
Just ask Phyllis to do
it. But
she'd be happy to. I want to thank you so much for joining us, and I hope that you'll be up my way soon again so I can catch up with you.
Okay, I'd like it too. And thanks, Deb. Take care.
Yes, thanks,
Sam. Thank you.